Willkommen bei Marketer Talk, dem Podcast der Marketingbörse. Hier erwarten euch spannende Gesprächsrunden und Interviews mit Experten aus der Marketingszene.
Heute spreche ich mit Boaz Ashkenazi. I'll talk with Boaz Ashkenazi. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, it's great to be with you too. I'm excited to talk with you today.
I'm excited. I tell you, I have no idea what AI is. I know I'm speaking to the... you have had an AI podcast starting in 22. You are co-founder and CEO of Augmented AI Labs. And now you're senior director AI infrastructure of Redapt. Anything I missed?
Not really. I mean, there's a lot of things in the past too, but those are the big ideas.
Okay. Now we're all interested in AI and what we are doing in AI. How did you get to AI?
You know, when I was at Meta, I worked on the enterprise engineering team, which really meant that we built productivity tools for our employees. So a lot of the work we did was to help employees at Meta, and when I started, it was Facebook, be more productive. And we had a lot of AI engineers on that team, and this is before ChatGPT came out. So there was a lot of work that was being done with chatbots and other kind of software tooling to make software engineers more productive at the time. And when ChatGPT came out, one of our engineers got really excited about the technology, and he and I left to start Augmented AI Labs. And from there, we got really deep into AI workflows. Large enterprises and mid-market companies, what they were doing to increase efficiency. And we started to build a lot of tooling in the early days of large language models and ChatGPT to help them figure out where the efficiencies were.
And now the company you are senior director of, what kind of a company is that? Tell us a little bit about that and what you offer exactly.
You know, it's interesting. I've spent most of my career on the application layer, building software, building companies that were software focused. And recently I've gotten really, really interested in the layer that sits underneath that, which is the infrastructure layer. So if you think about a lot of the AI workloads that are happening across companies, these require a lot of compute and a lot of security and data to be able to power a lot of these AI workloads. And so this company, Redapt, functions at that infrastructure layer. It helps companies build out the resources, both hardware, think about GPU clusters and NVIDIA clusters, and then also all the security and data that needs to be wrapped around those to keep those clusters safe and keep the infrastructure safe. And so that's what Redapt does. It helps businesses understand how to operationalize that layer.
I'm a bit confused because for me as a marketing manager, I don't care about what the IT department is doing and about if they have inserts. I mean, that's their problem. It's a big problem, of course, but it's not really my problem. So where is IT infrastructure really important for me as the CMO? Because I don't want to get in trouble with my CTO and with my CEO because it's their business, not mine.
Yeah, it depends on how you think about infrastructure. You know, there's two parts to it. One, that usually in a big company, the responsibility is the CIO, and that's internal. That has to do with the software that gets purchased, the kinds of things people are using in that company. You know, some companies that we work with are really focused on Copilot because they can't use ChatGPT inside their enterprise. Other companies are much freer about the kind of tools that they use, but that's under the IT department and the CIO. Typically, the CTO in a company is handling the AI that's being built into products. And that is a different kind of infrastructure that gets built into these products so that customers can use AI. And increasingly, we're seeing that being folded into every product. And so we work with both. You know, it's important to kind of understand what happens inside an organization, but also what that looks like outside of the organization. And if I'm a CMO at a company, it's really important for me to understand how I'm delivering AI through my products and if that is something that story that I want to tell. And so I think for a CMO, it is important to understand, you know, how you are delivering that AI effectively. And some companies have to do it in different ways.
Now I got it. Okay. Two questions. Yeah. Number one, I have to note question number two, otherwise I forget it. Question number one, is German engineering companies, you know, we are strong, especially here in Southwest Germany with engineering companies, and they now know that they sell their machines worldwide. Both the Chinese are also catching up. And so the chance for the German industry is to put AI into the machines. Can you help them?
Absolutely. And I think one of the most interesting things about putting AI into machines, and machines is a pretty general category, but let's just say, hardware, there's a trend that's happening now where much, much smaller devices are being put into machines on edge. And that term on edge, I'm sure people are familiar with. But because the compute for AI is so high, a lot of times having all of that live in the cloud is not feasible when it comes to an edge device, whether that's a robot or whether that's a camera or whether that's a sensor. And so we're starting to see a lot of this hardware come on edge. And I think that trend is going to be more and more, whether that's on a handheld device or whether that's in an imaging device, that's going to be something that we see. And that's going to require kind of thoughtfulness within organizations to be able to split. And, you know, we call that hybrid, but part of it's going to be in the public cloud. Part of it's going to be close to home. Part of it's going to be on the machine. And I think that's an exciting development in the industry across different kind of groups.
Okay. Just to tell you what kind of machines I'm thinking of, for example, a tunnel bore machine, that is machines which drill large tunnels under the earth, and they go under the Alps, and these are German machines everywhere, and it's huge machines, and they need now maintenance, automated whatever, and so on. Okay, so this is one thing. B2B companies in Germany, they are very good in AI because they are trying to catch up with this. My second question, agencies, because you just said Copilot, ChatGPT. I mean, that's boring. Everybody does that, but that's not really AI. AI means I have my own AI agents, and these AI agents, if I'm an agency, I want to sell these agents. At least that's my perspective for an agency, for example, or for the software companies like the MarTech companies, they all have AI agents. Where is it important at that part to have your own infrastructure?
Yeah. Are you familiar with some of the new developments that have happened around OpenClaw? Are you familiar with OpenClaw?
Of course. I mean, if a Bavarian, if an Austrian goes to the U.S., and by the way, I mean, it's fantastic to see what these guys do. I just know the story of the guy who has his OpenClaw on his computer, and then tried to get a reservation at a restaurant, and he didn't succeed. So the computer said, okay, I'm going to help that poor guy. And they got a voice from 11 Labs, and then they just phoned the restaurant and did it the normal way by phone and told the owner, we got it. We made it.
Yes, I mean, you know that in the last 3 weeks, that has just exploded around the world. And, you know, OpenClaw now is part of OpenAI, you know, more recently. But that idea of being able to have operational agents on your own machine and be able to use your phone to text in and operate that remotely, it's really sweeping the boardrooms of a lot of companies. And I'm seeing a lot of C-level executives trying to think about how to implement securely those kind of agents within their companies. And truthfully, I see the revenue side of the business and the marketing side of the business really being able to take advantage of that. You know, and it's not like agents haven't been around for a long time. 2025, that was the year of the agent. People were talking about agents in January 2025. But I think that in early 2026, when OpenClaw really sweeped the world, it was finally a way for people to open source and test out these agents at scale and operationally. And I think that is really exciting. How that plays out for marketers, you know, you think about all the ways, all the manual ways that marketers have to create content, have to distribute that content. A lot of this can now be done with agents, not in a agent studio, but in a open source framework on their devices. And I think one of the things we'll start to see is organizations who care about security be able to implement OpenClaw-like systems within their frameworks. On the sales side, I think that the potential there is amazing. I mean, think about all the times that people have to track and do research on prospects, reach out to prospects, follow up with prospects, you know, all that inbound that's coming in that needs to be filtered. These agents now can do a lot of that work on your machines that was really hard for them to do before.
Okay, I get it from your side. Now I'm trying to explain you my point of view. I'm asking from the point of one of these many thousand of advertising agencies in Germany. And some agency, I know two big agencies, they implement AI now to sell to their customers ready-made AI agents. That means it's a kind of a ChatGPT or a custom ChatGPT, but enhanced and enriched with all the knowledge of the agency. So I can use it with the knowledge of the agency. I put on that knowledge my own knowledge, and the agency's knowledge stays with the agency. And my knowledge stays with me, and the LLM knowledge, okay, it's LLM knowledge. It's not really interesting. Yeah. What do you think about that concept?
I love that concept. You know, Augmented AI Labs, the company that I founded, built a legal AI tool that a lot of lawyers are using to be able to redline and mark up drawings. And we have one customer that wants to white label that solution and build in their own playbooks. And what that really means is you have a layer of software that's hitting a large language model and being able to do interesting things with general knowledge. But then you feather that with institutional knowledge from that law firm that's specific about playbooks and how to kind of move forward. And I think if you think about a law firm as an agency, like a lot of ways that they can stay sticky and stay valuable to their customers is through that protected data and that institutional data. Because the truth is that so many people now have the power to figure this stuff out for themselves, whether that's marketing or law or financial information. And there's still a lot of value in these organizations being able to bring something to the table. And that something to the table is their personal data and their personal IP. And so I think it's critical to stay relevant.
Oh, that's very interesting, because in legal, for example, I have two lawyers, okay? And these are only artificial lawyers. It's two different companies. One is yours, which you just said, Legal AI, or with the white label. No, not Legal AI. I'm the one who uses the white label solution. Yeah. But you have two customers. They both use the white label solution, and I use both of them. Sometimes this one, sometimes that one. For family affairs, I use that one. For governmental things, this one, because they are better specialized in this and that and this. And if it's too much, I cancel one or take another one. But it's your AI enhanced with the knowledge of a legal office.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, but there's also another way that I think organizations will be able to leverage these technologies, and that is not using the larger language models 100%. Like right now, most people that are using AI are hitting a large language model like Anthropic or OpenAI or Gemini or whatever their flavor of choice is. I think there's also an opportunity to use open sourced small language models that can be trained on specific data, data that is not necessarily public on the internet, data that large language models don't have access.
That's
really powerful. And that is very specific on industry. And, you know, when you think about the automobile industry, aerospace, very technical oil and gas, there's a lot of data and information that's just not public. And if there are industries that require intelligence that is powered by that data, there needs to be a different kind of model that you are accessing. And I think there's going to be a lot of businesses that use that structure to provide value to the marketplace.
Definitely. Absolutely. So, in fact, these German agency, the advertising, I mean, I'm from marketing, so I'm fighting for them. I'm fighting for them to survive. I don't want everybody just to take OpenAI and do the creatives and do all the content, because we need more than that. We need creativity. We need the experience, the long-term decades of experience in marketing and communication from the agencies. But the agencies, they have to be provided by people like you with the techniques below and with the infrastructure.
Yeah. I mean, but here's the thing that my hypothesis, we'll see if it plays out. I think that over time, people that are using AI for content creation and creativity and marketing are going to have to continue to stay relevant by not being generic. You know, a lot of the content that gets created by AI over time is always going to be based on what's done before. It has to. You know, that's how large language models work. And I think that's going to feel generic to a lot of consumers. The more creative, the more interesting our content can be, the more we differentiate ourselves. And that might be through small language models and proprietary data, but that might also be by just feeling like the content being more human. And I know it's challenging for a lot of marketers because they're having to move fast and these models are really, really good and they sound good. But I think there's still an opportunity for creativity in a space that's going to feel a lot very generic to people.
Definitely. I'm convinced of that. I'm absolutely convinced of that. And they put all their knowledge and they have on top of the LLM knowledge, they have inside their own system a lot of proprietary knowledge from the agency and they will feed that. And if I have a project, then of course there will be a human who just scribbles some ideas and puts it into the LLM and the LLM is then mixing this with already existent knowledge and so on. So it will be something like two parties playing together, the AI and the human.
Yeah. There's also another part that I'm starting to see out there that I wonder what you think about. You know, there's two parts in an agency. One part is actually creating the content and all of that work that needs to get done. There's also the part of winning business, going out into the market and winning business and selling.
Of course.
And people are trying to use AI for both. And one of the things that I think is really challenging and will be challenging over time is in a relationship-driven business where you're out trying to sell and trying to win business, how you use AI in that context. And I think that there's still going to be an opportunity for people to connect with other people, especially when trying to win that business means that you have to convince a human to give you the job.
Okay. Of course. I mean, that's no doubt about that. So the next thing I'm going to ask you some questions on this paper, which I have divided the eight things where AI is important for marketing. And one thing you just said, it's sales. It's lead scoring, is conversational AI and service, is lead lead qualification, intent detection. Yeah, the agency has to see, okay, there is in the behavior of a customer, there is an intent in this project or in that project, sentiment analysis and so on. So that might be a point, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, especially in trying to understand with all the noise that's out there in the world, who is really a qualified prospect? That's a hard thing to do right now. And I think, you know, at least for me, being able to have a summary of every day about what's happening out there in the world with the people that I care about and understanding where intent is, I think is powerful. And being able to move fast once you understand that intent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was number 7. Now I'm going to start with number 1. Number 1 is the brand. Brand, brand, brand. That means brand safety checks. That means time to market reduction, being faster than others. Let's go one by one. Brand safety checks, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that not only is it depends on the brand, but it could be a company brand. It could be an individual in a company. You know, one of the things that I think people are very at risk of right now is their personal brands being messed with on the internet with deep fakes and AI. And I think that there are companies now that are doing a pretty good job of tracking the internet and keeping track of voice and brand and, you know, personal brand. And so I think that's going to be really, really important moving forward. And I don't think we're going to be able to rely on the big companies to track that for us. I think there's going to be a lot of small players in the space that are going to be trusted third parties that do it for companies.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I don't want to have everything done by AI. That means human in the loop. What is the importance of having humans in that process, in any process concerning AI?
I personally think it's critical. And depending on the industry, there needs to be someone that takes responsibility for the final output. In law, that's very clear. You know, you want to be able to understand who you can go after if things go wrong. But in all industries, I think it's important to kind of have that check and that human in the loop. Now, one of the things that we see with OpenClaw and other agentic systems like that, there's a lot of work that's getting done without humans. But I personally think that there needs to be a check before everything goes out the door. And I use the metaphor, which I know gets used a lot, but I think it's a good metaphor, which is these AIs being an intern, you know, a very eager, qualified intern. But at the end of the day, if you're a senior software developer, you're looking at the code before it goes out the door. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind for businesses. And you're going to need that level of experience to be able to check on all of these things before you decide to put them out into the marketplace.
Hmm. In Munich on 10th of March, you're going to be there at SMX. You're going to hold the keynote. So these are search people. What are you going to tell them about the future of search and the future of search without clicks, maybe?
Well, you know, the majority of that conference is going to be focused on search, and there's going to be a lot of presentations on search without click and what the world looks like in this ChatGPT environment where people are using ChatGPT to ask questions. I'm going to try to focus on what I'm seeing out there in the marketplace and in the environment, and trying to separate the hype from the reality. And then I want to talk a little bit about the future. And I probably will bring up OpenClaw and some of these agents and what that might look like for people and how they can stay relevant. So that's what the keynote is going to be about. I want it to be aspirational. It's going to open up the conference, and they're going to be spending days talking about search. I want them to think about the bigger picture, how they can stay relevant as individuals. And then also from a society standpoint, what this might look like for us moving forward. You know, how are our jobs are going to change? On the podcast, which I host called Shift AI, we talk to a lot of industry leaders about how work is changing for them and for their employees and for their customers. These are organizations like Salesforce and DocuSign and Slack. These are big organizations. And I think that it's important for people to understand how life is going to change as a society and also how work is going to change as an individual. So I'm going to talk.
Stay relevant. I think that's the solution. If a company stays relevant, it will survive also in the AI age. But to get to the end, agents, AI agents, what kind of AI agents do you know in marketing which are working well? I know that the MarTech companies, they offer AI agents. What do you think about that? And what other agents might be interesting for marketing managers?
I think that marketing managers that are using agents to be able to effectively have a authentic voice are going to be able to separate themselves from the rest. And I'll just give you a simple example. A lot of people are using AI chatbots and AI agents to be able to write emails or write messaging and write copy or, you know, build presentations. It's getting better, but it's still very hard to do. And it's getting noisy. And as anybody that's on LinkedIn or any social media can see, there's a lot of AI slop. Being able to create agents that rise above that AI slop is going to be the big challenge. And a lot of people are going to be able to do it authentically by doing it manually, of course, but being able to create truly authentic agents is what I would be focusing on if I was a marketing manager.
And that might be a big problem because the agent is always a bit silly compared to the owner. All the discussions I had with agents where I knew or I suspected that I'm not talking about to Bo, but I'm talking to the agent of Bo, it's quite easy to detect that. And then I just quit the conversation and say, okay, I'm not talking to a machine. Sorry. I want to talk to people, and I do not want to talk to a machine.
You know, it's funny. I have a different take on it. My take is it depends on the conversation. If I'm talking to a bank, for example, and I'm trying to get information quickly and it's transactional, I'm okay talking.
Of course. No doubt. Of course. Yes.
If it's a higher stakes engagement and someone's trying to sell me something or we're working through a problem and I feel like it's not, you know, a human, that is different for me. But there's plenty of conversations that I have in the business marketplace that I'm happy to have an agent.
I'd love to have an agent who really is, who knows what he's doing. Sometimes agents are much, much better than humans.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What other agents do we have for marketing? These were conversational AI and it was assistants writing emails and assistants. What other agents which have maybe functions within an organization are there?
You know, what's funny is I've been talking to a lot of organizations. I think marketing definitely falls into this category that spend a lot of time having to answer RFPs, requests for proposal. And it's just a big part of the job. It's very time consuming. And being able to go into the organization, understand where all the case studies are, understand where all the documents live and create these proposals is hugely time consuming. It sounds trivial, but from a time standpoint, it's not. And to get that right is really hard. And so I think that organizations that are in the business of having to answer to requests for proposals have a huge opportunity to leverage AI to do not all of the work. I don't think it's 100% of the work and then you ship the proposal. But 80% of that work getting done by an AI in a fraction of the time can transform your ability to get to market faster. Businesses that I know of in the United States that are RFP heavy tend to be in the public sector, government work, where they have to compete in that way. Education, you know, where there's constantly, requests for proposals. I think there's a huge opportunity.
Oh, one last question. When is the AGI coming, the general artificial intelligence?
It's a little hard to define AGI, but in some ways, for certain professionals, I think it's already here. And I think it's here for software engineers more than anybody else, because the kind of productivity that I see and the ways that software engineering is changing is so dramatic. And I think they're feeling it first. They're feeling it before marketing professionals, and they're feeling it before lawyers and before financial professionals. And they are, when you talk to a senior engineer and you ask them what their life was like before ChatGPT and what it's like now, it's dramatically different. Some of the companies are right. 80% of the code that's being written, sometimes 100%, is being written by AI, and they're reviewing it. But that is powerful, and that ship has sailed. And so I think that everybody else in the world is going to start to feel the same way that senior engineers and software engineers feel now. And I think there's a hint of AGI in what they're experiencing.
Bo, thank you very much that you took the time to explain to somebody like me all these details you did.
Well, it was wonderful talking with you.
Thank you.
Das war's auch schon mit der heutigen Episode. Wir hoffen natürlich, dass sie euch gefallen hat und würden uns sehr gerne über eine Bewertung freuen. Wenn ihr keine Folgen verpassen wollt, abonniert gerne den Marketer Talk der Marketingbörse. In diesem Sinne, vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und bis zum nächsten Mal.